Morning, everyone.
Today's daf in Rabbi Kama is Mem Hey. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf as long as Zichron Nishmas Lubiger Vila Bashmuel. We are in Mem Dalet Mem Beis. We are at the two dots, a little bit less than halfway down the Amud. A continuation of what we were discussing yesterday. We are focusing on the Mishnah. The Mishnah back on Mem Dalet Mem Aleph talked about various paturim regarding an animal that does damage and causes death. The Mishnah back in Mem Dalet Mem Aleph described the scenario of Shor Shehayah Mischachech B'Kosel. The shor was rubbing up against the wall. It had an itch. It was scratching itself against the wall. V'nafal al ha'adam. And the wall fell on top of a person. Niskaven la'arog es ha'behema v'harog es ha'adam. L'knan v'harog ben Yisrael. L'nafal v'harog ben kayama potter. And then we also learned back in the Mishnah that if the animal's intent was not to kill the person, but rather to kill somebody else, so then the animal itself is not going to be put to death. The animal is not going to be nisko, and the owner of the animal presumably is not going to be paying kofar as well. Yesterday, a large part of the discussion around yesterday's daf, Mem Gimel and Mem Dalet Mem Aleph, was focusing on whether or not these two concepts are necessarily linked with one another. Whether or not with the animal is going to be put to death, the owner is going to be paying kofar, and in the absence of the animal not being put to death, is the owner of the animal not going to be paying kofar. That's something we discussed yesterday. In the meantime, however, we're just focusing now on this idea of kavana, that in order for an animal to be chayiv skila, so the animal has to have kavana, animal has to have intent. And not only intent to kill, but intent to kill that particular person. So we learned back in the Mishnah that if the animal's intent was killing another animal, and by accident its intended victim was not the one who was victimized, but the animal went after another, by accident went after a human, so the animal is going to be exempt from being put to death. Han is kavan laharog etzev aharog etzev chayev. Now, if we're going to learn the Mishnah, we're going to make a simple diuk in the Mishnah. It sounds like as follows. The only time there's going to be exemption is when the animal's original intent was to kill another animal and by accident killed the man. But what if the first intended victim was a man? So the first intended victim was a man, and by accident the animal ended up killing another man. So it sounds like from the Mishnah does not address this case, but it sounds like from the Mishnah you'd be chayev. Because when we read the Mishnah critically, we always do this. We always scale back one step from where the Mishnah is. So the Mishnah is talking about where the original victim was intended victim was an animal, and then when the animal kills a man, you're putter. So that means that if the original victim was a human, and the intended victim is somebody else, another human, so it sounds like in such a scenario you'd be chayev. And then Masnitzin Dolok Rabbi Shimon. Now, if this reading of the Mishnah is right, here's what comes out. It comes out now that the author of the Mishnah is not subscribing to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Detanya, because we learned in a brisa. Rabbi Shimon Amar Afilin Eskam LaHarug Etzev HaHarug Etzev Pater. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion as follows: if I, let's say, do have not only did I kill, I had intent to kill. Just happens to be I was going after Reuven. Instead of Reuven, I ended up hitting Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that I'm going to be putter. Because even though there was intent, I wanted to kill him, there was intent, but because I ended up killing somebody else, Rabbi Shimon says you are not liable for the death penalty. This is not Ritzicha, where you are subject to the Chi of Misa. And what the Gemara is really doing is the Gemara is making a bit of a leap. Because this position of Rabbi Shimon is specific to people killing. We're not talking about people killing, we're talking about animals killing. So what the Gemara is assuming is that whatever Rabbi Shimon's position is regarding people killing is going to be the same position regarding animals as well. My time at Rabbi Shimon, back to the Gemara. What's the drasha behind Rabbi Shimon? Amakrash, or Yitzhakav, Vagam Alav Yumas. The ox is stoned, and also the owner of the animal is put to death. Now, again, we already pointed out a number of times, the owner of the animal is not actually put to death. But the language of the Torah, however, allows us to make the following comparison. Kemisas balam kach misas ashur. Whatever the laws are regarding execution of the owner, meaning of a man, is going to be the same guidelines for execution of the animal. Ma balam ad mechaven lei afshur, nami ad mechaven lei. So, just like when the owner of the animal is only subject to chi of misa, only when he not only killed, but intend to kill that particular person. So the same thing is going to be true regarding the animal. Now, how do I know that this is Rabbi Shimon's position regarding the owner? Because when the Torah describes the scenario in which you end up killing somebody, the Torah says that you ambushed that individual and you killed that individual. Meaning that in order to be chayv misa, you have to have killed the person you intended on killing. Ajit kavin lo. V'rabana, now the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Shimon. And the Chachamim say that if you had intent to kill, and you did kill, it just happens to be that the person you killed was not the one intended, you intended, the Chachamim are of the opinion you're still going to be chayv misa. This is still Ritzicha, and it's still subject to capital punishment. How does the Chachamim know that? Hi, As far as Va'ar of Lo is concerned, they generate a different halacha, and that's the following. The halacha that if I throw a stone into a crowd of people, and it hits one of the people, and one of the people die, so as terrible as that is, as heinous as that is, you're not going to be subject to the death penalty. Now, Heichidam, the Gemara says, now in that particular case, let's be a little bit more specific. What exactly are the parameters? The Ika Tisha Kananim Ve'echad Yisrael B'nehem. So the Gemara says, are there 9 Kananim and 1 Jew? Now, the fact of the matter is that if you kill a Kanani, you're not Chayiv Misa. Now, it's still an Isser. It's still Ritzicha. It's just not subject to the death penalty. It's the only difference between killing a Jew versus killing a non-Jew. Meshech Chachma, I've heard this a number of times. The Rav over here in our shul spoke about this. Spoke this out once. The Meshech Chachma brings down that when you kill a Kanani, the reason why it's not subject, you're not subject to the death penalty, is because in addition to Ritzicha, it's also Chil Hashem. Meaning part of receiving the death penalty is that it's a kapara. It serves as atonement. And sometimes the crime is so great that even the death penalty by itself is not going to be enough of atonement. So Meshech Chachma brings down that when you kill a Kanani, it is Ritzicha and it's also Chil Hashem. So that's why the death penalty by itself is not going to be enough. Anyway, so if we're talking about where you threw the stone into a crowd of people, and 9 of them were Kananim, 1 of them was a Jew, so typically the Ruba Kananim Ninu. So there, I don't need a drasha, I just need to know the basic halacha, which is Rov. Most of the people there are Kananim. Therefore, you follow Rov, most probably who I hit was a Kanani, and therefore I'm not subject to the death penalty. Inami pago paga safek nefashal sahakal. And if you want to tell me that it's 50-50, Five Yisrael and 5 Kananim. So then we know the halacha is that it's a suffix. We're not going to put somebody to death based on a suffix. So the Gemara says, so it must be, the Chiddush is the following. Let's say 9 were Yisraelim and 1 was a Kanani. So follow. You threw a stone into a crowd. Most of the vast majority of the crowd are Jewish, and let's say only one of them is a Kanani. You are not good, and we don't know who the you don't. We know that someone died, but we don't know who the victim was. You're not going to be put to death. Why not? The Alpha Gav Deruba Yisraelim Nenu. Now Rov are Yisraelim, and so therefore the halacha should demand, it should dictate that you're put to death based on Rov. But because there's 1 Kanani, Havale Kavua, so the halacha is they were all stationary, and therefore when you have a mixture, but at the time they were all stationary, called Kavua Kamechsa Mechsadami. So the rule is, we've seen this time and again throughout the Gemara, is that anytime you have Kavua, so therefore the numbers no longer become relevant, and it immediately goes to a 50-50. V'safik nefashos sahako. So now we're at 50-50, 50% chance that he's Chayev Skila, meaning the perpetrator, 50% chance that he's not Chayev Skila. We're not going to put somebody to death over a 50-50. So that is what the Chachamim learned from the Pasuk of Va'ar of Lo. That's why the Chachamim don't learn out Rabbi Shimon's halacha of Niskavim Laharog Ezev, Haharog Ezev Pater. That means that according to the Chachamim, Niskavim Laharog Ezev, Haharog Ezev, Chayiv, you're going to be liable, even as long as you had intent to kill. Even though you didn't kill the one you intended to kill, but you killed somebody, you're going to be Chayiv Misa according to the Chachamim. Right, so there's a discussion in terms of when we go from the position of Kavur to the position of what the Gemara refers to as Naida, which means that you're moving around. So you're right. It becomes tricky to
If you throw the stone and they're moving, it still kills people.
So if they're moving at the time, so that's no longer kavua. Kavua means that they're stationary,
so there
right? The best example, which the Gemara always gives regarding kavua, is stores. meaning stores are, you know, you go into one of the stores, there are 10 stores lining the street. 9 are selling kosher, 1 selling non-kosher. And you get from one of the stores, but you don't know which store you got from. I know that sounds funny, but let's just play along. You know, you don't know which store you got from. So that's a perfect example of kavua, because stores are stationary. So that's a more classic example. Here we're talking about people, but as long as the people aren't moving, so they have the status of stationary. So then we're going to follow. Then we'd follow Rove. Okay, Mishnah. We are on Mem Dal Med Beis. We're starting now the new Mishnah. Shura Isha, Shura Hayisom, Shura Apotropos. The first three cases are oxen that are owned by people. A woman owns it, a orphan owns it, or an apotropos. Now, orphan and apotropos are similar to one another, but as Rashi points out over here, you could just easily say that the orphans, we're talking about orphans that have not yet been appointed an apotropos. And then the third case in the Mishnah is the apotropos, meaning you have an estate and the basin appointed a custodian over the estate. So in the first three cases, there's an owner. Okay, what we would not classically refer to as a primary owner, but still, it's an owner. Shur HaMidbar, Shur HaHekdesh, Shur HaGesh Shemesh Vein Lo Yorshim. And then the next three cases are animals that are certainly ownerless. Animal that belongs to Hekdesh. Now, Hekdesh is a entity. It's what we would call in America, I'm saying this by way of analogy. It's like a corporation, okay? It's not a person. Or Shur HaGer. I'm sorry. Shur HaMidbar. Let me go in the right order of the Mishnah. Shur HaMidbar, literally, an ox, a wild ox, not owned by anybody. Shur Hekdesh, Shur belonging to Hekdesh, and Shur HaGer Shemes Vein Lo Yorshim. And let's say a convert owned it, and now once you convert, you have no family, you have no halachic family, and the convert died, and the convert did not have any children. So under those circumstances now, that animal is Hefker, belongs to nobody. Hare Elu Chayavim Misa. In any one of the six cases we just mentioned in the Mishnah, if the animal kills, the animal is going to be put to death. That is according to the opinion of the Tanakhama. And the Chiddush, of course, is that despite the fact that there is an owner, but not what we would call like a primary owner, or there is no owner, right? The first three cases in the Mishnah is their owners. The second three cases in the Mishnah, literally no owner to the animal. And still, once the animal kills, the animal's put to death, at least according to the Tanakhama. Rav Yehuda Amar, Shur HaMidbar, Shur HaHekdesh, Shur HaGer Shemes, Peturim, Min HaMisa, Lefi Shein Lambalam. Now, Rav Yehuda disagrees with the latter three cases of the Mishnah, because in the latter three cases, there literally is no owner. And because there's no owner, so therefore the animal's not put to death if the animal killed. Tanu Rabbanan. We start with the Gemara. Shur Shiva. If you go through the Psukim in Parshas Mishpatim, you're going to see by the Negicha, when the ox is goring and killing, you're going to see the word Shur mentioned a total of 7 times. Lahavi. Now, the first time the Shur is mentioned is to tell us the base halacha, which is that the Shur kills, it's put to death. And then what about the next 6 times? Lahavi. Shur Isha, Shur Yisom, Shur Apashapa, Shur Amidbar, Shur Hekte, Shur Hagir, Shur Mesve, Ein Lo Yorshim. So this is exactly the opinion of the Tanakhama of our Mishnah. The next 6 times are referring to 6 different types of Shurs. 3 owned, women, orphans, Apashapas. 3 not owned, Hekdesh, Midbar, and a ger that dies. Rav Yehuda Amar Shur HaMidbar Shur HaHekdesh Shur HaGer Shemes Vein Lo Yorshim Peturim Min HaMisa Lefi Shein Lambalim. And then the Braisa also here records the opinion of Rav Yehuda that in the latter three cases the animal's not going to be put to death because there is no owner. Amar Rav Huna. So Rav Huna now is going to give us a chiddush. So far what we have in our Mishnah and in the Braisa is a very basic machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda. If an animal kills and it does not have an owner, will it be put to death? So the Tanakhama of the Mishnah and the Braisa say, yes, it will. And Rav Yehuda and the Mishnah and the Braisa say, no, the animal will not be put to death. Within the sheet of Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna now says the following chiddush. Rav Huna poter hayu, I'm sorry, I'm Rav Huna. Poter hayu Rav Yehuda, afilu nagach, ulavasof hikdish. Nagach, ulavasof hifker. Rav Yehuda is going to go one step further. Let's say when it did the negicha and it killed, the animal did have an owner. And then the owner then relinquished his ownership of the animal after the negicha. Rav Yehuda now is of the opinion, this is Rav Huna's understanding of Rav Yehuda, that still the animal is not going to be put to death. Even though at the time of negicha, it had an owner.
But once you make it after, doesn't it have to appear in court?
No. What's critical, as we're going to be discussing later this morning, is that the animal has to appear in court. Whether he has to appear with the animal in court, that's not perfectly clear. But we'll discuss later that about the animal's appearance in court. And now Rav Huna is saying obviously a very big chiddush within Rav Yehuda, that even though the animal was owned at the time of the negicha, as long as the owner relinquishes his ownership after negicha, according to Rav Yehuda, the animal is not put to death. Where did Rav Huna get that from? Because that's a big chiddush. And it must be that he deduced it. Because read carefully what we Rav Yehuda's position. Shur Hamidbar, v'shur Hagir Shemeis Vein Lo Yorshim, Shur Hagir Shemeis Mainihu. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. The case of the Ger, consider the Ger died, and he left now the ox with no owner. So effectively, isn't that the same thing as Shur Hamidbar? The answer, yeah, it is. So why would the Braisa do that? Why would the Mishnah do that? Why would we have to repeat a case which is effectively is the same thing? If there was a ger and the ger dies, the animal is ownerless. And that's basically Shur Hamidbar. So like, why do we even need that? So Dekev and De'en lo Yarshim Havale Shur Hefker. Hainu Shur Hamidbar. The Gemara asked the question. So Hainu Shur Hagir Shemes Ve'en lo Yarshim. Alalav hakamash malan da'afilu nagach ulusof hikdish nagach ulusof hifker shmamina. It must be that the second case of the ger is there to teach us the additional chinish. Now again, the Braisa doesn't spell it out, which is why Rav Huna spelling it out is really giving us the chiddush. But the chiddush is that even though at the time of the negicha the animal was owned, as long as it becomes ownerless before the animal is taken to court, the animal is not going to be put to death. Tanyanamihachi, the Gemara now is going to be quoting a braisa supporting Rav Huna's understanding of Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna's chiddush in Rav Huna. Yes, okay, and the braisa says, I'm Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, I'll go one step further. Afilo nagach v'sof hikdish, nagach v'sof hifker pater, shenem Rav Yehuda bevalav, v'hemis. In order for the animal to be put to death, the animal received a warning while it was owned. So you need both the animal killing and you need the animal to be taken to court, and while the animal had an owner. And if you didn't have an owner to the animal during the course of this process, the animal is not put to death. So the Gemara says, "Ugemar din lo beinan, so v'hashor yisakel v'gam." Sorry, v'hashor yisakel gemar din hu. So the Gemara says, "Now wait one second. If we're going to follow this line of thinking, don't I also need the owner to be there for the gemar din as well?" So the Gemara says, "Yeah, you know what? You're right." According to Rav Yehuda, in order for the animal to be eligible for death, it needs an owner during the skila, during the hamada bedin, and during the gemar din as well. Meaning during all these processes, according to Rav Yehuda, you need an owner to the animal. If you do not have an owner over the course of this entire duration, according to Rav Yehuda, the animal is not going to be put to death.
Tanakama
believes that the Torah gives us an extra drasha. Meaning, the Tanakama, what is he going to do with this most recent drasha that we just learned? The Gemara doesn't ask that question. It's a more than reasonable question. But the Tanakama is of the opinion, like what the Gemara explained earlier, that because the Torah repeated the word shur 7 times, so it comes to tell me that all these different categories and classifications of oxen are put to death. Even though 3 of them, literally there's no owner, the ox is still put to death. And again, from a simple Svara standpoint, I'm giving very simple, what the Tanakhama is of the opinion is that an animal's execution is more a function of, hey, this animal killed, the animal's dangerous. Like let's get it out of circulation. Yeah, in other words, right, according to the Tanakhama, which is the accepted halacha. Okay, next. We're in the Mishnah on the bottom of Memdal Medbei, Shur, Shuhu Yotze, Lisako. So let's say the animal is being taken out to be being executed. So we are now well into the process. we're pretty much at the conclusion of the process. The animal killed, the owner, the animals, well, in this case, it doesn't matter if it's a tam or a muad, any animals that kills is put to death. The animal's killed, the animal's taken to court, court found the animal guilty, there were two witnesses, and now the animal's being taken out to be executed. So we are almost at the tail end of the process. And then v'hikdishu balav. And then the owner of the animal says, you know what? Now is a great time to dedicate this animal to the Beis HaMikdash. As a parenthetical note, it's not a great time to dedicate the animal to the Beis HaMikdash. The animal is about to be executed. So, eino mukdash. So, aside from the fact that it's not a great time, the Mishnah tells us the more relevant point, which is, it's not effective. The kedusha that the owner is trying to imbue into the animal does not take hold. Because the animal now has been sentenced as a shor haniskal, and therefore the hekdesh just simply won't apply.
He's still considered an owner, even though they cannot be.
Yeah. Well, we're going to speak a little bit more about that in just a moment. So, but the simplest answer is yes. So, the Mishnah calls him ba'alav. So. Okay, so in a mukdash shachto. Now let's say after the sentencing of the animal, the owner says, "Okay, now is a great time to shach the animal." And again, just between you and I, it's not a great time to do so. But the owner shachs the animal, so besar aser. So the meat of the animal is going to be aser because again, now after sentencing, the animal is branded a shor hanisko. Now, if let's say the owner does it before the Gemar Hadin, where the owner is makdish the animal, the Mishnah says, okay, the animal is mukdash. If the owner shechs the animal before Gemar Hadin, the meat is mutter. Okay, period. Okay, adkan. Meaning that is part one of the Mishnah. Part one of the Mishnah talks about the owner trying to either shecht or be makdish the animal. After sentencing, totally ineffective. Before sentencing, effective. Now, there's the next part of the Mishnah. Let's read the next part of the Mishnah. I think this is the first time in the Bavas, I think so, that we're actually being introduced to the Dal Shomrim, the four different types of custodians who are responsible to be watching the animal. They are a shomer chinam. A shomer chinam is somebody who is watching, who is a custodian, but does not get paid in doing so. So basically, he's watching an animal out of the goodness of his own heart and not receiving any benefit for watching the animal. The shomer chinam has the least amount of liability. And intuitively, we understand why. He's not getting paid. He's not using the animal. He's getting no benefit from the animal, so it's all responsibility, it's no benefit, so his level of liability is the least. Next, Shawal. Shawal is somebody who borrows an animal. Somebody who borrows an animal, he has the highest level of liability, because he's borrowing an animal, he's making usage of the animal, he's not getting paid to watch the animal, and nor is he paying to use the animal. So the borrower has the highest level of liability. We're going to learn over the course of today's daf and throughout the bavas that the shawl is chayev afila ba'ones. Even if something happened to the animal that was totally unexpected, the shawl is going to be chayev. And then you have your two middle categories. You have your nosei sachar and your socher. Nosei sachar, somebody's watching an animal but being paid to do so. So he's not using the animal, but he's being paid to watch the animal. And a socher is somebody who's using the animal, but is paying to use the animal. So these are middle categories over here. Where do they fit halachically? So generally speaking, we say that the owner, the custodian, the shomer, is going to be chayv b'geneva v'aveda. If the animal was stolen or lost, so he's going to be responsible, but he's not going to be chayv b'onsin. Okay. Nichnasu tachas habalim. So, all the shomrim now are going to fill in the role of the owner. While under their care, they become now the substitute owner. And therefore, mur mishal nezek shalom v'tam hasham chatzin nezek. Under their watch, if the animal does any damage, they're going to be the ones liable to have to pay for those damages. If the animal's a tam, they're going to be paying chatzin nezek. If the animal's muad, they're going to be paying nezek shalom. Okay. Okay, that's the second half of the Mishnah. We're going to come back later to the second half of the Mishnah. We're going to address the second half of the Mishnah in the second half of today's daf. In the meantime, however, let's go back to the first part of today's of the first part of the Mishnah, and that is the animal being sent out to being executed. So post-sentencing, the owner can do nothing. Pre-sentencing, the owner can be makdish the animal, can the owner can sell the animal, and the Gemara here quotes a brisa. Before we start with the Gemara, before we start with the brisa, in general, just good yedias to know. Basic yedias of Torah. When we talk about a shor haniskal, an animal that is sentenced to die, so Rashi's of the opinion throughout Shas, that the animal status of shor haniskal begins post-sentencing. Meaning that the animal, according to Rashi, has the status of shor haniskal. Shor haniskal is, as we've been discussing over the last week of daf, asar ba'achila, asar ba'hana'a. Right, you can't eat it, you can't benefit from it. Rashi says that status begins at sentencing. Once the Beis Din sentences the animal to die, Rashi says the animal now is branded the status of shor haniskal. According to Rashi, everything over here makes perfect sense. Perfect. Meaning, basically, what did we just learn together in the Mishnah? Once Beis Din has the Gemar Din, so your shechting it is going to be totally ineffective. Yeah, because at this point going forward, the animal now has the status of shor haniskal. You can't eat it, you can't benefit from it. If you try to be makdish it, doesn't work. Right, because according to Rashi, it has the status of shor haniskal. Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, and again, this is throughout Shas, right? He says this a number of times. Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, is of the opinion that the shor haniskal status does not begin until after execution. So that means that once the animal is executed, then and only then is the animal going to be considered a shor haniskal. Now, that's Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. There are many Gemaras that are difficult to read, according to Rabbeinu Tam. I say that now, just first of all, just in general, it's good to know. When does the animal become have the status of shor haniskal? Rashi says post-sentencing, and Rabbeinu Tam says post-execution.
But it's not a shor anymore.
I mean, you're right. In other words, it's a shor haniskal, meaning after, okay, just in general, the machlok's Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam. Tanu Rabbanan, we are starting... Beforehand, in other words, it's a status where the animal, we know what's going to end up with the animal, but in terms of the status doesn't change yet. Even though Beis Din sentenced.
Before the sentence, if someone agrees to have a Torah, what happens?
Right. Or if somebody shechts it before the animal is executed. Right. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, so there's at least a discussion to be had. According to Rashi, there's no discussion to be had.
According to Rabbeinu Tam, it could be
right, so what is Rabbeinu Tam? Well, I'm going to present that question. I'm leading us to the point of how's Rabbeinu Tam going to understand our entire sugya? That's the right question. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in a brisa. Shor she'emisad shelo nigmar dino. So if a ox killed and it's before sentencing, machro machor hikdisha mukdash. So if the owner wants to sell the animal, he may. If the owner wants to be makdish the animal, he may. Now, shachto b'sar mutter, and if you shach the animal, the meat of the animal is going to be mutter. Hechziru shomer lebeis ba'alav. Now let's say this next part's a little bit comedic. Let's say the animal killed while under the care of a shomer, and now it's before sentencing and before Beis Din came out with a gemar din. So the shomer goes back to the owner and says, I was very careful about the way I watched your animal. Everything went, for the most part, great. Just one small detail. While under my care, the animal killed somebody. And right now there's a trial. But don't worry, Beis Din hasn't arrived at the Gemar Din yet. Here's your animal back. We're good. Now, imagine, by the way, that at social functions, they're not going to be getting along that well. And I'm just guessing that they may not end up becoming the best of friends or remaining the best of friends. But in terms of the halacha, that is considered, as a custodian, he is free and clear. And he's not going to be liable. Now, I love picturing that scene of the guy returning the animal, saying, we're pretty much good. here it is back. Anyway, so Mishnah Gemar Dino. However, after the Gemar Din, So now this is post-sentencing. Macher and a macher, so the sale is not going to be a valid sale. Hikdishu and a muktash. And if you try to be makdish the animals, that's also an effective. Shachta, basar, asar. And if you shechta, the meat is going to be asar. Hechziru shomer lebeis ba'alav, ein a muchzar. Now, if it's post-sentencing, so that means that under the care of the shomer, the animal killed, the animal was brought to Beis Din, Beis Din ruled on the animal, and sentenced the animal to die, and now the shomer is trying to bring this back to the owner, saying, I know this was my responsibility. And you know what? Here it is. An animal that is sentenced to die. So according to the Tanakhama of the Braisa, Eino Muchzar. The custodian at that point in time has not satisfied his responsibility of returning back the animal, even though the animal's physically here, but come on. In other words, the animal right now has been sentenced to die. The animal from this point going forward is Asr Bachil, Asr Bahana. What are you returning back to the owner? Effectively, nothing. Physically an animal, halachically worthless. So, according to the Tanakhama, it has not been returned. Rav Yaakov Omer, Ad Mishnig Mardino, Yechziru Shom Labal of Muchzar. Now, Rav Yaakov in the Braisa takes a very interesting opinion, and that is that even after the Gemar Din, if the Shomer returns it back to the owner, so then, again, they may not end up becoming the best of friends, but at least the Shomer can now say, I return to you the ox. Yes, it's sentenced to die, but at least I returned it to you. Okay, and in just a moment, we're going to explain the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yaakov on this last point over here. First of all, a couple things to go over before we go on. Before Gemar Din, so the Braisa says, and the Mishnah said it also, that you can sell the animal. Now, it's a little bit strange and almost like a little disingenuous. Meaning, I'm selling an animal that right now is in the middle of sentencing. Right? Beis Din didn't paskin yet. It's the middle of sentencing. So first of all, I would like to suggest, and I didn't see this inside in the Gemara, but if you didn't disclose that information, so then we can call that a mekachtos, and I think we can all agree to that. But more fundamentally, if you take a look at the first Rashi on the page, the top Rashi on Mem Ham and Aleph, Rashi says, Machor hu l'radya. Yeah, Rashi says, you're not really selling the animal. Meaning, you can't sell an animal in the middle of sentencing. Like, that just, it doesn't work. Rashi is actually, what Rashi over here is talking about is renting the animal, making usage of the animal. The word radya means plowing. Meaning that what you're going to be doing before sentencing is, the animal's still yours. And Beis Din didn't paskin on the animal yet. So, until that point in time, you want to squeeze out whatever you can out of the animal. Rent it for plowing. Rashi says that's what the Gemara is talking about in terms of selling of the animal.
There no shibud from the Nazik's perspective on the animal? Like the Nizak is supposed to get half the of the animal.
Well, right now we're talking about the animal killed. So
the time it could still be killed, right?
Yeah, in other words, yeah, you're going to put the animal to death.
So according to Rabbi Kiva, they're partners in a way.
Okay, right, and it makes it a little bit more complicated. Correct. Okay, so that's point number one. Point number two, I mentioned earlier the machlokes between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Now, according to Rashi, everything out here works out for the most part perfectly. Meaning because we have drawn a line in the sand between before Gemar Din, after Gemar Din. After Gemar Din, you can't sell it, you can't be makdish it. If you try to shechta, you can't eat it. According to Rashi, right. After Gemar Din, the animal now is a shor haniskal, and the Isar Achila Isar Ana has kicked in. So according to Rashi, we're perfect. Well, how do you read the Gemara like Rabbeinu Tam? So if you take a look at the top Tosfos on Mem Hei Amud Aleph, so he brings this down in terms of how would you read the Gemara if you're Rabbeinu Tam. Look at the top Tosfos. After sentencing, you can't sell it because it's asabana, and that is according to Rashi. Now, Rabbeinu Tam takes the position that as long as the animal is alive, it is not yet asr. Fascinating. So Tosos, in defending Rabbeinu Tam, would say, here's what Rabbeinu Tam would say. Yes, the animal does not have the status of a shor haniskal, and it will not have the status of shor haniskal until after it's actually stoned. by the Beis Din, but once we are in post-Gemar Din, once we're post-sentencing, so we're between sentencing and execution, so there's this concept of what's called Inui Hadin. Inui Hadin means once Beis Din has decided, Beis Din has to mete out its decision. And this is where halacha and American law are like so different than one another. American law, so after sentencing, you have appeals, you have, and you can have, right, yeah, right. It just, the process can really drag out. And in halacha, halacha is absolutely dead set against this idea. Once Beis Din has made a decision, that's it. Execute the decision. And I mean that here literally. Execute the decision. And so there's this concept of Inui Hadin. And so what Rabbeinu Tam will say is that even though the animal does not have the status of Shor Nisgal after sentencing, but still, Inui Hadin demands that the animal should be executed right away. And that's why. Don't sell the animal. Don't lease the animal. Don't rent it out. Don't be makdish the animal. Don't shech the animal. In other words, all these halachas have nothing to do with the animal being a Shor Nisgal. It has to do with the fact that we want to execute as quickly as possible. That's how Rabbeinu Tam would understand our Gemara over here. So all this is a function of Inui Hadin. Okay. And it's interesting because, just one more comment on this Tosfos. Inui Hadin by people I understand. Meaning that it's, in other words, Beis Din has ruled, and now, right, don't, right, like you read about, you hear about here in this country, like don't let it drag on now for months and years. Meaning, Beis Din has made its decision. Execute Beis Din's decision right away. Okay. By animals, it's just a little, the animal knows that it was in court. The animal knows that it's just interesting to apply the principle of Inui Hadin to animals. Okay. Anyway, back to our Gemara. In our Gemara, we just wrapped up a machlokas at the end of the Braisa between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yaakov. If after the Gemar Din, the Shomer attempts to return the animal back to its original owner, so can he wipe his hands clean and say, okay, good. Job done. I wouldn't say job well done, but job done. And I'm returning the animal to you. So after the Gemar Din, the Tanakama says no. Because after Gemar Din, the animal is, let's say the Gemara, nice and simple like Rashi. After the Gemar Din, the animal is Asar Ba'achila, Asar Ba'hana. It's a Shor HaNisgal. And so therefore, it's the Shomer cannot return and say, here it is, I'm returning it to you. And Rav Yaakov says, yes, you can return it to him. And the Gemara now wants to give a pshat in this machlokas. Lema baka miflagi. Rabban Tzavri and Omrim, Bi'isuri hana reisha chalafanecha, Rav Yaakov Tzavri Omrim, Bi'isuri hana reisha chalafanecha. And perhaps over here, the machlokas is the following. I took something away from you. Over the course of, while I took it away from you, it becomes asur b'hana. So halachically, we can get no benefit from it. But you know what? Physically, it's here. And then I'm going to return it to you. So the most classic example of that would be chametz bePesach. I steal chametz from you before Pesach. Now Pesach rolls around, chametz now becomes asur b'hana, and afterwards I return it to you after Pesach. Here you go. Sorry. Now in the sorry, it's a very hollow sorry, because what I've just returned to you is something that you cannot get benefit from. It's chametz bePesach, chametz she'avar alav haPesach, asur b'achila, asur b'hana. Can't get benefit from it. So now I've effectively returned to you something that has a value of zero, even though physically the item is here, halachically it has no value whatsoever. And perhaps the Gemara says this is the very machlokus occurring right over here. Amar Rabbi Tekuli Amar Omrim Bisurei Anar Risha Chalafanecha. Dimkei Niflag Leinyan Chametz bePesach. So the Gemara says no. That's not the issue over here. Because if that were the issue over here, so why have the discussion limited to just Shor HaNisgal? Have the discussion a more broader-based discussion. In fact, include Chametz bePesach as part of the discussion. Clearly over here, this machlokas has something to do specifically with Shor HaNisgal. Elahacha begomrim dino shoshor shalob befanav kemiflagi. And the issue over here is the following. The animal is going to be executed. Sorry. Let me go back one step. The animal is going to be tried in front of Beis Din. Okay. Now, a trial of an animal, in general, let's start here. If a person is going to be tried in Beis Din, So part of the most basic requirement of trial is that the person has to be there in the court. You cannot try somebody in halacha without the person actually being present in the court of law. Okay. So is the same thing going to be true regarding an animal? Can an animal be tried in court if the animal is not present? And the basic difference between people and animals is very simple. People can make claims, meaning I need to defend myself and I can defend myself. Regarding an animal, what is the animal going to say? Okay. So, Rabbanan Tzavri ain't gormim dina shal shorei la befanav. So, according to the Tanakhama, the only time that an animal can be tried and based in is only if the animal is present. And now the owner can say to the shomer the following, and this gets interesting. The owner can say to the shomer, look, you're at fault. Because, amar le'i adrita ni'ali, had you returned the animal back to me, so then what I would have done is, I would basically have created a situation in which the animal would not have been in court. And therefore the animal would not have been tried, and therefore the animal would not have been sentenced. Hava ma'akne le'la agma, I would have taken the animal to the swamp. Hashta atfaste le'ture bi'yada, de'lo yachin li'shu edina bahadeh. And you, the owner saying now to the shomer, took the animal by hand, you brought it to the court so that it could be tried. So basically, I blame you. Now, if you think about this argument of the owner to the shomer, it's a little bit strange. Because essentially what the owner is saying is, hey, if the ox would have been in my hands, I would have avoided the court. And then, of course, it only begs the question, are you allowed to do that? In other words, if your ox killed, can you basically do what the Gemara just suggested? Hide the ox somewhere in the swamp and avoid your court date? It certainly sounds that way from the Gemara, even though reflexively I think it doesn't sound honest. But at least that's the taina that could be made from the owner to the custodian. Rav Yochanan Savar Gomer Dino Shoshor Shelo Befanav. Damle Sof Sof Migmar Hava Gemir LeLedine. So, and Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that no, that the court can try the animal, and the court does not need the animal in the presence of the court in order to be tried. And so, therefore, according to Rav Yochanan, regardless of where the animal is, the animal will be tried in court, even though in absentia of the animal is still going to be tried. And therefore, according to Rav Yaakov, the owner can have no taina on the shomer because sof, it's going to be tried anyway.
So according to Rav Yaakov, if the owner decides that he's going to make his animal hefker or give it to Beit HaMikdash, how would they coordinate with the court so that the court knows that he has done that? So they don't know that they're sentenced.
Okay, right. It will become more complicated. Agreed. So my time of the Rabbanan, and the Gemara then just quotes Psukim that supports each position. Hashur sekav gamba lav yumas kemisas abalim kach misas hashur ma abalim bifneim hashur bifanav. So again, the execution of the animal according to the Tanakhama is going to be treated just like a person. Just like a person can only be tried when in court, so to an animal can only be tried when in court as well. Now I mentioned this earlier this morning. I just want to reiterate. Does the owner of the animal also have to be in court as well? From the Gemara, that point is not clear, right? Certainly, according to this opinion, which is the accepted opinion, the animal has to be in court with the owner, perhaps. Not clear from the Gemara. V'Rav Yaakov Bishlam Abalim B'nei Taina Nenu Al Ashur Bar Tanai Sahu. And Rav Yaakov says, look, it doesn't make any sense. I understand the persons need to be in court because the person can defend himself. The animal cannot defend itself, and so therefore the court can have the case even though the animal's not there. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the first part of the Mishnah. So again, we just analyzed whether the basic distinction of an animal that kills and the status of the animal before sentencing and after sentencing. Before sentencing, the animal's not a shor nizkal. After sentencing, to say to the Gemara, the Mishnah, and the Gemara, very simple and very much like Rashi, that after sentencing, the animal is a shor hanizkal with the status of Isser Hana and Isser Achila and Isser Hana, So then you understand all the halachas that we discussed. After sentencing, you can't be makdish it, you can't sell the animal, you shecht it, you can't eat it. If a custodian was the one watching it, he, according to the Tanna Kamma, he can't return it to its original owner. Okay. Yeah.
According to what they call for humans, after sentencing is the same thing.
I know. I think this idea of Rabbeinu Tam is limited. I'm right. It's limited to only the Shor Niskal. Okay. Master l'shomer chinam l'shal v'chulei. Now we're up to the second part of the Mishnah, and that is our introduction to the Dal Shomer. When you're a shomer watching an animal, you now take on the role of the owner in terms of responsibility and liability. So, Tanu Rabbanim, we learned in the Brisa Arba, Nichnasu Tachas Abalim, four people take the place of the owner. Hargu, that means that under the care of the Shomer, if the animal kills, Tamim Neragim Peturim Menakofer. So, if the animal kills while under the care of the Shomer, the animal is going to be put to death, to Shor Nisgal. Furthermore, if the animal is a Tam, the Shomer doesn't pay Kofer. Mu'adin, however, if the animal is a Mu'ad, then, Neharagin, not only is the animal killed, but Mishamim is a kofer. Then also the owner, let me say that better and let me say that clearer. The shomer has to pay kofer. Sure. Because the shomer was the one who was responsible, and it was under the shomer's care, and if it killed while under the shomer's care, and the animal's a muad, the shomer is going to need a kapara. And so therefore the shomer is going to pay kofer. Now, let's go to the next part. Now the shomer has to answer back to the owner. Because remember, the shomer took on the responsibility of watching it. And now, under his care, what happened? The animal killed, and the animal was killed. And so now that represents a loss to the owner. Now the shomer has to go back to the owner, and in addition to, think about this, in addition to taking money out of his pocket to pay the kofer payment to the nizak, he also has to reimburse the original owner for the loss. Makes perfect sense. Mishal mitzkof lev chayav and lahachzir demeshor labalav. Chutz mishal mechinam, with exception to shomer chinam. Where there, the owner does not have to make restitution. So the Gemara says, now that last point of the Braisa, let's consider. Amri, hechidami. Idanatra afilu kulanami lifteru. Now the Gemara says, I don't understand. If the shomer did a proper shmira on the animal, and for circumstances beyond his control, the animal got out and killed and was killed. So what was more was the shomer supposed to do? Meaning he satisfied his shmira responsibility, and it was circumstances beyond his control. Now Rashi over here does point out, notable exception is Shoel. Rashi says that right here, that the Shoel is going to be the notable exception, because when you're a Shoel, you have full liability, even in the case of Onis. So,
did you say that even for a Tom, the watchman of a Tom is more restrained?
We'll get to that point. Just hold that thought. So, I feel cool and I'm a lifter. So, the Gemara says, so if you did your shmira responsibility, so why are we singling out the shomer chinam? It's not limited to shomer chinam. If you watch the animal properly, so then you're indemnified. If you are a shomer chinam, a socher, a shomer sachar. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand why we single out shomer chinam. And if you didn't do a proper shmira, I feel a shomer chinam, nechayev. Well, you're going to be liable, and even if you're a shomer chinam, you're going to be liable. You were negligent in watching the animal. And so therefore, you're going to, even as a shomer chinam, you're going to be liable. So Amri, hacha b'maizkinah, d'natre shmir p'chutzav, l'natre shmir ma'ula. So this idea, we're going to see a lot in the beginning of the sixth parak. But we're seeing it right now as well, and that is, there are basically two grades of shmira. Basic shmira and upgraded shmira. Right? That is right. Sounds like you're, all this marketing. So there's basic and there's deluxe. Now, basic shmira, we'll talk about it later, but basically I close the door and the door can sustain a regular wind. And then there's shmira ma'ula, which is upgraded shmira. Now, you gave basic shmira, but you did not do the upgraded shmira. Shomer chinam kaltale shmirasa. Hanach lo kaltale shmirasan. Now, as far as the shomer chinam is concerned, basically you get to check the box. Yeah, I did what I was supposed to do. And so therefore, from that point forward, I am no longer liable. But you see, when it comes to the other shomer, the shomer sachar, the socher, You see, there, you're still going to be responsible for Geneva Va'aveda. So even though you gave it a basic Shmira, but you can't check the box. In other words, your responsibility is not yet done. So Amri Kaman Zagamar says, fine, but let's consider. Ikar Meir da Amar Socher Kishomer Chinam Dami Les Nechutz Mishomer Chinam Vasocher. Now, Rav Meir's position, which again, this is the first time we're hearing this in the Bavas, but Rav Meir's position is that a Shomer, a Chinam, and a Socher are equivalent with one another. Because if you think about it, what effectively is a Socher? I'm renting the animal. So yes, I'm benefiting from the animal, but I'm paying for that benefit. Kind of offsets each other. According to Rav Meir, when you're renting, you are like a Shomer Chinam, because you're paying for the benefit that you're receiving. So if our Brice is subscribing to Rav Meir, so then including the list should be both a Shomer Chinam and a Socher. And the Iker, Rav Yehuda Damar, Socher, Kinos Yisachar. Now, it's true that Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that Socher and Kinos Yisachar, in terms of liability, are equal with one another. But Nisnechutz Mishomer Chinam V'kulam B'muadim Peturim. But if you're subscribing to Rav Yehuda's viewpoint, well, the Braisa is missing a really important point, which is, once the animal is a Muad, then even basic Shmir is enough. And this is where Rav Yehuda's position defies logic, and we'll try to explain it later. But I'm just, and we've said this already once before, and we're saying it now as well. According to Rav Yehuda, when an animal's a tam and you're watching the animal, you need an upgraded shmirah. But once the animal becomes a muad, basic shmirah is enough. It defies logic.
Doesn't, because you're more on the line because you have to pay Maliyah, so you're more in.
Okay, we'll try. Okay, we'll,
there's no cap on.
Fine. Later, we'll try to understand it. But in the meantime, however, once the animal's a muad, so basic shmir is enough. So now the Gemara wants to know. So if the Bryce is authored by Rav Yehuda, so then a really simple question. Well, then if that's true, so then not only is the Shomer Chinam going to be exempt, but even a moored animal is going to be exempt, because Rav Yehuda holds that by a moored animal, basic shmir is all you need. So le'inyan kofer, v'kulam b'moad n'patur le'inyan kofer. I'm Rav Huna Barchina Hamani Rav Elazar. So the Gemara says like this. Here's how we're going to explain this braisa. The author of the braisa is Rav Elazar. Damar ein lo shmir ela sakin. Rav Elazar has an opinion which is, once you are entrusted to watch an animal, the only thing that will exempt you from Shmira is the knife, meaning the killing of the animal. Otherwise stated, there's no level of Shmira that you can do that's ever going to be enough. Not the Shmir Pchusa, not the Shmir Me'ula. So, Le'inyan Socher, Savala K'Rav Yehuda. Now, as far as the Socher is concerned, he holds like Rav Yehuda, which is that a Socher and a Shomer Chinam, a Socher and a Shomer Sachar are equivalent to another. Dama Socher, Kenosi Sachar Dami. So that is one way to explain the Braisa. So the author of the opinion is Rav Elazar, and that's why when the animal is when you are a Shoel, a Shomer Sachar, a Socher, and you watch the animal, and let's say you even do a good Shmira on the animal, but still, once the animal kills somebody, you're going to have to pay kofar. And the reason why you're going to pay kofar is because the author of the braisa is Rav Elazar. And Rav Elazar says that it doesn't matter what kind of shmira you invest in the animal, you're still going to be on the hook to having to pay kofar. Abai Amar Lolan Kirameru Ukedamachlev Rava Baravu of Itni Socher Ketza Mishalim Ramer Amar Kishomer Sacher Rav Yehuda Amar Kishomer Chinam. A second approach of the Gemara is that the author of the Braisa is Rabbi Meir, in that Rabbi, there are Amorayim who have Rabbi Meir subscribing to the viewpoint that a Socher and a Shomer Sacher are one and the same, halakhically. And so if you subscribe to that viewpoint, so then you can have the author of the Braisa being Rabbi Meir. Amr Avalazar Master Shor L'Shomer Chinam, he's a Chayev Huzak Pater. If I hand my animal over to a Shomer Chinam, and the animal damages others, the Shomer is going to be liable. If the animal is damaged, the Shomer is not going to be liable. So Amri Hechidam, the Gemara says, well, that doesn't make any sense. Idikaba Alav Shmir Nezakav Afilu Huzak Nami L'Chayev. If the Shomer Chinam took on the liability of Whatever damage it happens, I'm going to be liable, so he's going to be liable. Whether the animal damages others or the animal itself is damaged. V'idalo kabbal al shmiras nezakav, afil hizik nami li pater. And if he did not accept upon yourself shmira, so then you should be exempt. Meaning, if you told the owner, look, I'm going to watch the animal, but I'm going to be indemnified. So, again, you could do that. So, Amar Rabba la'olam shekibal alav shmiras nezakah v'hachah b'mayis kinan kagon shehikar bo shehu nakhan ustamad demilsa de lo azal ihu umazik achrina kibal alay da'asar achrina umazik alay l'diday lo asik adayte. So, the Gemara says that we're talking about a specific scenario in which the shomer knows that the animal is a little bit wild and the shomer has taken on upon himself, look, I'll make sure that it doesn't damage other animals. For that, I'm going to accept liability, but I'm not going to go to the so far as to protect the animal from itself. And if the animal is damaged, for that I'm not going to accept liability. I think when I think about these gemaras, I just think about auto insurance, right? You get to pick and choose, you know, what kind of coverage you want. You know, sometimes again, this is not me advising, but sometimes, right, you pick the coverage that protects you from others, but not necessarily protects from the collision of the car itself. So basically, that's what we're describing over here in this last case. Okay, let's quickly review. We finished up the two discussions of the Gemara regarding is an animal going to be killed if it is missing an owner? So the Tanakhama says yes, Rav Yehuda says no, and the Gemara brought down drushas for both positions. We talked about the animal prior to Gemar Din and the animal after the Gemar Din. Prior to the Gemar Din, it's not Asar Bahana. After the Gemar Din, the animal is Asar Bahana. That's Rashi's understanding. That's the easiest way to explain the Gemara. We talked about if the Shomer can return the animal post Gemar Din. Tanakhama says no. Rabbi Yaakov says yes. We gave an attempt to explain the Machlokas. And then an introduction this morning to the Dalas Shomrim. And once you become a Shomer, you take on the role of the owner. And that means that if the animal kills while under your care, you have to pay kofar. You have to, under certain circumstances, reimburse the owner for that loss. And an introduction today to the Shomer.